In the year before I moved to Louisville, I was living in Boston, and an advantage that I enjoyed very much was that living there, I was able to pay regular visits to my dear friend, Christine. Christine was juggling a career, a marriage, and a three-year-old. But somehow she always managed to be baking something. And Christine believes in butter and lots of it. So I'd be treated to homemade buttered bread and conversations in her kitchen. These visits meant the world to me. I was going through a rough patch in my life. I always felt somehow restored when I went from the corn cob of my existence to the cornucopia of hers. I also felt a little guilty to be so much on the receiving end. So I was stunned one day when Christine said, "Thank you so much for visiting me here, always taking on the inconvenience of the travel and never pushing for return visits that I couldn't possibly manage. I would feel isolated without you. Your generosity in visiting me here means the world to me." Well, it was a moment of sweet confusion, really, about who was giving and who was receiving. It's a confusion that may be greatest where love is truly mutual. We talked about it and learned that the willingness to receive is a very great gift to give. But this was an easy instance because we were close friends. The willingness to receive, or what Dr. John Tatamanil calls the hospitality of receiving, can actually be quite difficult. The theme of this festival week is crossing borders. And one challenging aspect of that theme is to allow others to cross our borders, to truly receive them with openness. Imagine, for instance, being open to receiving from someone whose holiness code makes you off limits. The woman at the well was surprised by Jesus' request for water because, as the narration explains, Jews do not share things in common with Samaritans. Samaritans apparently had no problem sharing with Jews. This was a one-way prohibition. So she might have been more irked than flattered. Some of us here today know that initial feeling of offense in situations that, like this one, are both social and religious. Catholics do not share Holy Communion elements in common with Protestants. Many Baptists do not want to receive church music leadership from musicians who have not been baptized by immersion. A number of historically black denominations were born from the difficulties whites have had in sharing in common with African Americans. In the National Presbyterian Church of Mexico, communion elements may not be received from an ordained woman. Sharing holy things in common with lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgendered, queer brothers and sisters is a problem for most of the world's Christians. And that's just talking about the barriers to receiving across the borders within the Christian religion. Being receptive to gifts given across the borders of other religions can be a big step as well. And yet, spiritual hunger and thirst do help us again and again to open ourselves, to give the gift of receiving. And often, when we relax our border guard and help another to pass over, the gift that we give benefits both the giver and the receiver, the host and the guest. One woman at Dr. Tatamanil's lecture here this spring gave an example from her own life. She'd attended a rally focused on a social justice concern, and she was quite wound up, full of outrage concerning the rally's cause. Then she noticed some Buddhists who were carrying the same sign she was. But their emotional state was very different from hers. They seemed calm and centered. She realized that her own spiritual state did not reflect the best insights of her own Christian tradition. This brief, positive encounter with Buddhists made her a better Christian. And encounters with interested Christians in the U.S. now challenge Buddhists in return, starting with the fact that many women have stepped up to fill that void of teachers of Buddhism. The Samaritan woman in her village allowed their spiritual hunger and thirst to carry them past any distaste they may have felt. They opened themselves to Jesus and hosted him and his group for several days. Their reward for this openness was a gift of unspeakable value. They gained the treasure of knowing and embracing Jesus Christ. They were willing to learn when they might have preferred to teach, might have even felt entitled to teach. We're happy for the Samaritans. But I'm not so sure about the disciples, either then or now. Clinton Marsh, in his book, Evangelism Is, meditates on the story of the woman in the well in every chapter. He posits that, quote, dragging his unwilling disciples through Samaria may well have been part of Jesus' training for them, unquote. Marsh thought that this experience in Samaria laid the groundwork for Peter's later experience of entering a Roman centurion's home and baptizing the centurion's household. You can see the disciples if you look at the cover of our programs. This image reproduces an icon. You see them over there in the left-hand side. I bought this icon in the gift shop of a museum near Antalya, Turkey. Christian tourism in Antalya is a good source of income for the local Muslim population. I love the fact that you can see all 12 heads of the disciples in this painting. All 12, I counted them. The fact that they seem frozen in place suggests that they were momentarily stunned. They'd gone to the village to acquire food, and so maybe they'd thought that they were protecting Jesus from having interactions with Samaritans. Well, the Muslims in charge of the museum gift shop near Antalya had put a label on the back of this icon to help the visitors. I turned it over, expecting the label to say, Jesus and the woman at the well. Instead, I found this label, Jesus washes the disciples' feet. Well, that label has its own truth, don't you agree? A foot washing is an act of humility and service as a host welcomes a guest. And Jesus did insist that the disciples both give and receive that act of hospitality. One hopes that Jesus' sustained interaction with the Samaritans did serve the disciples, teaching them to cross borders. But what in this Samaritan experience would make them more willing to learn from others? To be spiritually enriched by others, to truly exercise the hospitality of receiving, to wash feet and let their feet be washed. Did they leave Samaria feeling merely vindicated, feeling they had shared successfully? mission accomplished? Or did their extra few days in Samaria open their eyes to the riches of a people whose history of intermarriage between Jews and non-Jews had taken their faith in some new directions? We don't know. And this is not a small matter. The new Grawemeyer Award winner, the Reverend Dr. Willie Jennings, will speak here this week. And in his book, The Christian Imagination, Theology, and the Origins of Race, he traces the historical development of pedagogical imperialism. This is a view held by many Christians, a view that we have to teach, but not to learn. I personally have been enriched by learning from Christian traditions other than my own. And by exploring them, I have also felt part of Jesus' prayer that his disciples would know their unity. But I confess that I suffer from some pedagogical imperialism in my encounters with other religions. Positively, it's because I'm focused on the treasure of unsurpassed value that I've already found in Jesus Christ. But negatively, I do not like some specific aspects of some of the other religions. My border guard is on alert. There used to be a TV show called What's My Line? And it was about one's line of work. But far more interesting to me now is What's My Line in the sense of the lines I've drawn around me for identity and protection. Are you looking for what your line is too? I'm challenged to think about that in a new way now because of the possibility that Jesus' request for a cup of water and his exchange of ideas with the Samaritan woman does carry the same message that he gave to Peter and the other disciples at the foot washing. What if, in both stories, he's showing that in order to truly have a part in him, we must receive as well as give, experience mutual service, must enter dialogue to learn as well as to teach, must love enough to lose track of who is giving and who is receiving? What if, when we do that with his children everywhere, we are doing that with him? And what if this openness is not only about our individual spiritual enrichment, but about God's intentions for all creation? What if staying an extra few days in our various Samarias to share in a deeper fellowship is what it takes to embrace God's reign in both this world and the next? So when I bought this little icon in Turkey, I thought it was an even exchange, my money for a painting. But I've received much more, received a sort of quirky wisdom from a Muslim I never got to meet. It's a wisdom that connects the water in Samaria with the washing of feet, a service to those of us who are willing to get feet dusty in crossing borders to both receive and to give. Can you feel it? Can you feel that sweet confusion and reorientation with me? We're together in Christine's kitchen, one of us seeing the gift of buttered bread and the other one seeing the gift of travel, because love makes us see what we receive. We're together at the well, sharing water and conversation as part of God's new creation. As we will sing shortly, whether we meet Christ in the kitchen or at the well, in a palace or a shack, just down the road or on a freedom march, at a garden grave site or in a moment of birth, we can ask for God's love to reorient us so that we give and receive for life and for hope. Amen.